Good evening, Patriots. This is Praying Medic, and this is my QAnon broadcast for Thursday, May 14th. Welcome to the broadcast. Those of you who are following along at home, doing your own decodes, you can find Q's post on a number of different websites. I've got a couple of sites you may not be familiar with. There is qag.news is another website available to check out Q's post. Q actually posted a screen cap from that one in this broadcast. And then there's qanon.news/Q, one of my favorite. It actually has some very cool features on it. Those of you who have an Android device, you can get Q Alerts Lite, the Q Alerts full version, and there's also the Q Map. And I would make a warning to you about the Q Alerts app. If you don't have it, you might want to get it. Don't wait too long to get it. I think in the future we're going to see more suppression and headwinds against Q-related things, and these apps may not be around forever, so if you're thinking about getting one of the Q apps, you might want to do that pretty soon. Those of you who are new to Q, or if you need some information for friends or family, you might want to check out my book, Calm Before the Storm. It is the first book in the Q Chronicles. I cover a lot of Q's major themes at the beginning of the operation, how it was set up. There's also a glossary in the back of over 500 common terms that Q uses, abbreviations, acronyms, agency names, people. You can check that out. It's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. My theme for this broadcast is The Swamp Runs Deep. And we've got a couple of rabbit trails we're going to be going down here, so just to let you know. But this won't be a very long broadcast, not like the last one. After the DOJ dropped its case against General Flynn, rather than dismissing the case, Judge Emmett Sullivan is going to allow friend of the court briefs to be submitted. Sullivan had previously denied amicus briefs in this case, so this is a little bit strange to say the least. And Q Blue Sky found a photo of Judge Sullivan and FISA court judges Boasberg, Collier, and Rudy Contreras. So here's the photo. And Blue Sky Q wrote, Judge Sullivan resides in the same court as FISA court. Here he is with Boasberg Collier. Boasberg is the current presiding judge of the FISA court. Rosemary Collier was the presiding judge. She actually stepped down from the FISA court. Both of them signed the FISA warrant. This is Carter Page's FISA warrant. Judge Contreras, Flynn's first judge, had to be removed from the case because of his personal relationship with Strzok. So Q reposted a link to that tweet. And there's also a link here to an article from Reuters about the recusal of Rudy Contreras from the Flynn case. And then there's a link to the FISA court membership. All right, get to those in just a minute. So in response to this tweet, Q wrote, excellent find, Anons, plural, Anons. But you must go back before you can go forward. Why did U.S. District Court Judge Rudolph Contreras recuse himself from Flynn's case? Judge Rudolph Contreras, current member of the FISA court, who signed the Flynn FISA, the swamp runs deep, Q. So I'm taking that as confirmation of something that a lot of us have suspected for a while, that Rudy Contreras actually did sign Flynn's FISA and was also the first judge in Flynn's criminal case who accepted his guilty plea. We don't have confirmation, but I think that is what Q is hinting at. Now we have this old drop that Q posted, and this is from August of 2018, special approval, setup example one. And then this explains how the Mueller investigation was used to quiet people who were being illegally spied on. So they used Natalia Veselnitskaya with Paul Manafort. They issued a FISA warrant on Manafort, and then he was entered into the Mueller investigation. Once he was in the Mueller investigation, he was kept silent. Same thing with Papadopoulos, Page, and Flynn. They enter you into the Mueller investigation, and then they silenced you. I'll have more on this in just a minute for those of you who need some background. We know that Judge Rudolph Contreras was the judge in General Flynn's case. He was the original judge who accepted Flynn's guilty plea. But after it was learned that Contreras had a personal relationship with Peter Strzok, the agent, FBI agent who set up Flynn, Contreras was recused from the case. So Q posted a link to this article from Reuters that notes that Contreras was also appointed to the FISA court in May of 2016, and his term lasts through 2023. This is the other link that Q posted. It's just a makeup of the FISA court currently. Boasberg is a presiding judge. Rosemary Collier actually stepped down March 7th, 2020. Rudolph Contreras and Conway. These are, I think Conway actually also signed off on one of the Carter Page's renewal, FISA renewals, if I'm not mistaken. And I think Mossman also signed one of the FISA renewals for Page. We don't know who signed the FISA applications for General Flynn, but I suspect we're going to learn that it was Rudy Contreras, and hopefully that'll be declassified at some point. If that's the case, if Contreras signed the FISA warrant on Flynn and was the judge in his criminal case with the Mueller investigation, this is going to turn out to be very interesting. FISA operations are highly secretive, which makes the FISA court a perfect place to carry out corrupt practices. And if that's the case, we're going to have some issues with the FISA court here. It'll be interesting to see what things Rick Grinnell declassifies in the coming weeks. So regarding the post in Q's first post, that would be this one. I'm going to do a little bit of explanation for people who are not up to speed on the way that they used the Mueller investigation to trap people. So Q had reposted this a number of times. And in February of 2019, Q said, "You have more than you know. Why did Loretta Lynch, Attorney General of the United States, grant special entry to Natalia Veselinskaya, Don Jr. setup meeting? Why was Natalia Veselinskaya barred from entering prior to the special visa? If you have no real evidence of Russia collusion, you must attempt to manufacture it." So Natalia Veselinskaya is a Russian attorney. She's actually working with Vladimir Putin, and Putin gave her almost unlimited freedom to work as a lobbyist in the U.S. on the Magnitsky Act, which was an act that basically put a lot of sanctions on Russia. So she was, as an attorney, was given freedom to try to get the Magnitsky Act modified. Now, she was in the United States representing a client in some hearings back in 2015. She left the country, and then she came back, and then she left the country again. And when she tried to come back, her entry was denied, but Loretta Lynch made a special exemption and allowed her to come back in. This was confirmed by Homeland Security. She was initially not allowed to come back. This decision was made by Preet Bharara because he said she did not need to be present in this case that she was arguing with this client, but Lynch made the exception. On June 9th, 2016, Don Jr., Jared Kushner, and Paul Manafort met with Natalia Veselinskaya at Trump Tower. And what's interesting about that is the day before that meeting on June 8th, the day of the meeting, June 9th, and the day after the meeting, June 10th, Veselinskaya met with Glenn Simpson of Fusion GPS. You know, the people who were involved in helping Christopher Steele put together the dossier. So Veselinskaya met with Glenn Simpson the day before, the day of, and the day after the Trump Tower meeting. Strongly suspect that Simpson was probably giving her instructions and getting information about the meetings so that could go into the dossier. So General Flynn was accused of being colluding with Russia through his connections to Russian Ambassador Kislyak. That's the phone call that is kind of the big news right now. Paul Manafort, because of the Trump Tower meeting, George Papadopoulos, because of bar talk about Clinton emails, and Carter Page was brought in because of several trips he made to Russia. So they all came under suspicion of being, you know, having colluding with Russia. They were entered into the Mueller investigation, and they were leaned on and pressured under threat of prosecution to not talk about how they were being spied on. The only reason Carter Page wasn't referred for prosecution was because his FISA application was declassified and made public. Bringing him into the investigation would risk exposing the deep state's methods of people keeping people quiet. So he's the only one who wasn't prosecuted. Thanks to declassified transcripts, we now know that collusion with Russia or dirt on Hillary never came up in that Trump Tower meeting, but that is what the mainstream media had accused Manafort and Don Jr. of. They accused them of, you know, having this meeting with this Russian attorney, and they were going to get dirt on either on Hillary or they were going to collude with Russia. And the transcript of the interview with the translator who was in the meeting, the translator said none of this stuff ever came up. They didn't talk about Russian collusion. They didn't talk about dirt on Hillary. They didn't talk about any of that stuff. So we're learning more as time goes on. Q posted a link to an article. This is a Breitbart article. Fox News, Ed Henry, he reported this on Tucker Carlson, I think, two nights ago. The report from Ed Henry is that there's going to be information coming out showing that CIA Director John Brennan had intelligence saying that Russia actually wanted Hillary Clinton to win the 2016 election because she was a known quantity. She had previously been Secretary of State, and Putin, his team thought she was more malleable and more predictable, while they saw Donald Trump as more unpredictable. We're expecting that information to be declassified at some point. So Q posted a link to that article, posted this drop from April 30th, CIA Brennan, in brackets, force. And then Q wrote, Russia, narrative all fake, Q. So Brennan forced this narrative that Putin actually wanted Trump to win when he really had intelligence showing, better intelligence, showing that Putin favored Hillary. All right, Catherine Herridge received a list of people who may have viewed General Flynn's unmasked name in intelligence reports. And this was declassified by Rick Grenell and made public. So we've got this, she has three pages, 2.5 pages, of names and dates of the people who requested to have General Flynn's name unmasked in intelligence reports. Now, we don't know if this person actually saw General Flynn's name in the report on these dates given. We also don't know what they did with that information. But this is just the beginning. We're starting to know who requested unmasking of General Flynn's name. And there's a lot of news reports out there right now. Chuck Grassley and Ron Johnson requested this information from Rick Grenell. He declassified it, made it available to them, and then they made it public. Grassley said, thanks to Rick Grenell for responding to my request for a list of General Flynn unmasking names. Prominent Obama administration officials like Biden listed needs answers on what they knew and when they knew it and why. Curious timing on some of these unmasking requests. There is some curious timing. I think it's actually a brilliant move by the White Hats, giving the declassified information to Catherine Herridge, who now works for CBS, and she's going to be reporting this information on mainstream media news, which I think is going to red pill a lot of normies. Rand Paul wanted to know why Joe Biden and other people requested to unmask General Flynn's name.
Yesterday, I sent a letter to Director of National Intelligence Rick Grenell concerning declassification of which Obama administration officials asked to unmask General Flynn. Today, I received the shocking answer that Vice President Biden and more than a dozen Obama administration officials requested and received the power to unmask General Flynn during his phone call with the Russian ambassador. The fact that Vice President Biden and all of the president's inner circle, President Obama's inner circle, individually requested to unmask General Flynn is very troubling. In addition to Vice President Biden, James Clapper, James Comey, John Brennan, Samantha Powers, and the president's chief of staff all individually asked to unmask General Flynn and to listen to his phone conversation. Intriguingly, a dozen more administration officials all chose to unmask General Flynn. Why is this important? Unmasking involves revealing the identity of an American's private phone conversation without a constitutional warrant.
Curious that Joe Biden made a request to unmask General Flynn's name on January 12th, which was the same day Washington Post published the first article about General Flynn's calls with Ambassador Kislyak. That was the article by Ignatius in Washington Post. When people asked Joe Biden if he gave that information to Ignatius, his team responded that they did not leak that information to him. Guess what else happened on January 12th? The same day that Joe Biden requested to unmask General Flynn's name, Obama awarded him the Presidential Medal of Freedom as January 12th. On the 11th of May, an Anon wrote this, "Hello, sir. Q+, is it really happening? Can you tweet it? Thank you, boss." And then the next day, on the 12th, President Trump tweeted, "Our testing is the best in the world by far. Numbers are coming down in most parts of the country, which wants to open and get going again. It's happening safely." So Q posted a link to Catherine Herridge's tweet about the unmasking and then said, "Board is under heavy attack." I can imagine the board's under heavy attack. All right, so we already looked at the Catherine Herridge tweet, the unmasking list. And there's a lot of reports out there that you can read more information on that if you want. I'm just trying to keep focused on what Q is posting. And Anon noted that the letter from General Nakasone, he's the director of the NSA, to the Office of Director of National Intelligence regarding the Flynn unmasking was dated May 4th. Why is this relevant? Well, if you assign a letter to the day of the month, then 4 becomes D and May becomes 5, right? So D5. And Anon said D5, date of the ODNI release. Now Q responded to that. "Excellent find, Anon. They, the deep state, thought it meant December 5th. That's when they held the state funeral for George H.W. Bush. NSA, a lot more coming soon," in brackets, Q. All right, backstory. When Q posted about D5 in November of 2018, it was in reference to an open congressional hearing on the Clinton Foundation that was scheduled for December 5th, D5, where U.S. Attorney Huber was expected to testify about the Clinton Foundation. The deep state kind of panicked because they were fearing that public disclosure of the criminal activity in the Clinton Foundation, they didn't want that to happen. So Q kind of suggested that they took the bait and they held a state funeral for George H.W. Bush on the day that the congressional hearing was scheduled, right? So that hearing got postponed for a week. And Q wrote, "Bait expends ammunition." So moves and counter moves. The congressional hearing on the Clinton Foundation was held a week later on December 12th, but Huber didn't testify. And he didn't testify because the Clinton Foundation investigation at that point was not complete. And the DOJ doesn't discuss open investigations. According to Attorney General Barr, this is from an interview that he did May 30th of last year, Huber's investigation into the Clinton Foundation is over.
Huber had originally been asked to take a look at the FISA applications in the electronic surveillance, but then he stood back and put that on hold while the Office of Inspector General was conducting its review. So he has not been active on this front in recent months, and so Durham is taking over that role. The other issues he's been working on relate to Hillary Clinton. Those are winding down, and hopefully we'll be in a position to bring those to fruition.
All right, and Anon noted that the list of people who requested to unmask General Flynn's name only covers a time period between the election November 8th and through the end of January 31st. So the Anon wrote pain, right? And this is implying that there's going to be a lot more information declassified. Unmasking requests prior to November 8th and after January 31st. So Q responded, "This is only the start. Q, boom week ahead." So we're going to be getting a lot of booms. I'm going to do my best to keep up with Q and keep up on the posts. All right. So Joe Biden's people were not happy. Andrew Bates is with his campaign. Catherine Herridge is a partisan right-wing hack who is a regular conduit for conservative media manipulation ploys, because she agrees to publicize things before contacting the target to ask for comment. They have denied leaking any. And here's the thing. It's not illegal to ask for someone's name to be unmasked in an intelligence report. But that has to be handled a certain way. And if that information is leaked, that is a serious violation of the laws. And I think that's what we're looking at down the road. All right. Let's see. Kathy Garriott. And everybody's asking this. Oh, please tell us, what were they, the envelopes? The envelopes at the that were handed out at the state funeral, George Bush's funeral. Q answered that question. Q said it was our promise to counter Q. And I do not know why the Pences received one. I don't care. You're not going to convince me that Mike Pence is a bad guy because he received an envelope. Pence is a good guy. He's a patriot. And that's all I have to say about that. All right, so Q posted a couple of screenshots here. And on the left, this is actually from a New York Times article. It's a timeline of events related to the unmasking of General Flynn and his phone call with Kislyak. On the right is the list of people who requested to unmask General Flynn's name. Now, the interesting thing is all these unmasking requests that are highlighted here in the red box were all a couple of weeks before General Flynn made his phone call to Kislyak. So Q says dates are important. FISA unmasking requests prior to Ambassador Kislyak phone call. Who asked Ambassador Kislyak to call Flynn? Setup, FBI entrap, plus FISA late justify. Q. Alrighty. So let me just give you a little bit of background information on this. So the timeline of events related to General Flynn's phone call came from a New York Times article. If you want, you can check that out. Timeline, what we know about General Flynn's phone calls with Russia. So this is the timeline that they created. Tree Huggins' sister got cued because she said, how do they explain so many of the requests being prior to the Kislyak call that supposedly was the predicate for the investigation? And Sergeant Schultz, that would be Joe Biden, he must have forgotten he was on the list considering what he told George Stephanopoulos on Sunday. So Joe Biden was asked on Sunday if he knew anything about what was going down with General Flynn and his phone calls. And Biden said, I was aware that there was, that they had asked for an investigation, but that's all I know. And then turns out he's one of the people who asked to have Flynn's name unmasked. So if the predicate for the investigation of General Flynn was the phone call on, I think this December 30th, then why the heck are people asking for his name to be unmasked a month ahead of time? Samantha Power asked for his name to be unmasked on November 30th, a month before the phone call. So this doesn't add up. And Adam Housley said this is exactly the point. And Anon posted both of those tweets, and Q responded, go back further. So there's a link here to an NBC News article, what the Mueller report says about Jared Kushner, Ivanka Trump, and Donald Trump. Now, Q wrote, the hook, November 30, unmask, needed justification. So that was Samantha Power. She was the first one on the list who requested unmasking. That was on November 30th. Who set up the meeting? Who was directing Ambassador Kislyak to make contact, meeting plus phone? Q. Since Samantha Power is the one who made the November 30th unmasking request, and she was ambassador to the UN, it's possible that she was the one who suggested that Kislyak should call General Flynn. Because as ambassador to the UN, she probably would have known Kislyak. Another possibility might be Susan Rice, could be someone like Valerie Jarrett, but I think that Samantha Power is probably the most likely person. Being an ambassador and Kislyak being an ambassador, they probably knew each other. And we don't have any proof, but I suspect it was actually Samantha Power who set up the meeting to create the predicate to put Flynn under investigation. So the linked article discusses the Trump transition team making connections with their counterparts in the Russian government, specifically a meeting at Trump Tower between General Flynn, Jared Kushner, and Kislyak. Now, that meeting was kind of hush-hush. It didn't come out until later, and a lot of people were, you know, wondering what this was all about. I had to do a little bit of digging to find out when this meeting actually took place. The meeting took place on December 1st, 2016, the day after Samantha Power asked Flynn's name to be unmasked, right? So Samantha Power on November 30 asked for Flynn's name to be unmasked, and the very next day, December 1st, Kislyak, General Flynn, and Jared Kushner have a meeting in Trump Tower. It lasted between 20 minutes and a half hour. The subject of discussion was mostly Syria and the situation there. All right. So information about the Trump Tower meeting with Kislyak and Flynn came up in testimony from in the Mueller report. And I dug through the Mueller report yesterday, and I was looking to see if there's any mention of who set up the meeting with Kislyak and General Flynn. Dmitry Sims is one guy that's mentioned. He was trying to get some connections between Trump's people and Putin's people, but it doesn't say in the report that he's the one who set up the meeting. Another possibility, Peter Avin, Kirill Dmitriev, and even the convicted pedophile George Nader, all were trying to set up meetings between Trump's people and the Russian government, but there's no indication in the Mueller report that any of those people set up that Flynn-Kislyak meeting. I went through the report, Mueller report, and I couldn't really find any definitive statement showing who set up what meeting. There are some other meetings. I mean, we know for a fact that Sims, for example, set up a meeting at the Mayflower Hotel, which was when Jeff Sessions met Ambassador Kislyak. But there isn't any mention of who set up that Trump Tower meeting. Gonna move on. So Q kind of clarified the point he was trying to make here. The point to understand, they, knowingly in brackets, unmasked, attached names to, after POTUS won the election of 2016, they thought they could prevent the exposure of this information and remain protected. Why did they believe this? What insurance did they have? Infiltration of U.S. government? This fact alone should scare every American. Shadow presidency, shadow government. It took this long for a reason. So the deep state was confident they had enough people in key positions, even in Trump's cabinet, that their illegal surveillance tactics were never going to be declassified and made public. A shadow government succeeds by having the right people in the right places, and they did for a while. So Q posted a link to an article where Devin Nunes says we're doing large criminal referral on the Mueller dossier team that put together a fraudulent report that knew there was no collusion on the day Mueller walked in the door. So Mueller's team is in trouble. And if I remember correctly, I think Undercover Huber tweeted out this morning that four members of Mueller's team have resigned from the DOJ and dropped all their cases. So Mueller's team is going to be in the hot seat here, I think, coming up pretty soon. All right, last night, Q posted that video of the AC-130 gunships painting the target with the laser again, and then the gunships dropping munitions on it. You've seen this before. I'm not going to include it in this video, but this is an indication that things are happening. Things are definitely happening. The storm is about to make landfall. All right, let's see this. We have this tweet from last night. AntiLive73 was cued for this screen cap that shows Facebook has announced a hateful memes challenge with a $100,000 prize to anyone who creates an artificial intelligence program that can identify hate speech memes. So Q posted a link to that and said, panic? Q. And this is a previous post from 2018 where Q said that non-NSA technology today cannot read and filter memes. So we're going to be getting ready the memes here. There's going to be a lot of fun coming up in the next few weeks. Let me move along here. Stardust 1416 got queued this morning, and that was for this tweet. Wow, Hillary is openly talking about QAnon. It does not get any more mainstream than that. We must be over the target. Congrats, patriots and digital soldiers. And that's about an article in The Atlantic where they actually interviewed a lot of people about Q. They actually reached out to me to interview me. I do not take interview requests from anyone in the mainstream media. But they reached out to Hillary, and she said, I just get under their skin unlike anybody else. If I didn't have Secret Service protection going through my mail, finding weird stuff, tracking the threats against me, which are still very high, I would be worried. This is a very long article, and actually I mentioned in the article, and I did want to make a correction about something that was said in the article. The author of the article reached out to me, and I don't do interviews with the mainstream media about Q. She did say that there's money to be made from ads on YouTube, and that seems to be the primary focus for Hayes, that's me. Those videos have been viewed more than 33 million times altogether. My Q for Beginners video includes ads from companies such as Vacation Rental Site and the Epic Times. Well, full disclosure here, my YouTube account has been demonetized. I don't make any money off of any of the ads on my YouTube channel. And I suspect that at some point my YouTube channel will probably be taken down simply because I post about Q. So I wanted to clear that up. Q then posted this this morning. And this is an example, A, who, former White House staff, in brackets, one or more, introduced, pushed Dan Coats as Director of National Intelligence to POTUS, who, former White House staff, one or more, insisted that he could be trusted, knowingly or unknowingly, Q. So this is a warning to whoever it was that pushed for Coats to become DNI, that they're in trouble, and Q is asking if they knew that Coats was loyal to the shadow government. This morning, Tom Elliott got cued for this video. I'll let you listen to it.
What concerns did you have about General Michael Flynn in this period, which was from the day after the election to the inauguration?
Well, there was general concern about the number of engagements with Russians that we were seeing happening. We may not necessarily have known what the content of these engagements were, but there were numerous engagements by representatives of the Trump camp with Russians.
Did you see any direct evidence of collusion between General Flynn or any Trump campaign official with the Russians?
No, I did not.
Now, the vast majority of these unmasking requests that came from Obama administration officials actually came before the December 29th call between the Russian ambassador and Michael Flynn. Many of them came around December 14th, 15th, and 16th. Not from you, but do you remember anything suspicious happening at that time?
No, I don't, but I did note the cluster around that period, so which prompted several officials to request unmasking.
So asking for names, nothing wrong with that. Unmasking in of itself, nothing wrong with that. Leaking classified information, and by definition, these phone calls were classified, that's a problem. The idea of the leak, which is something that's also being focused on here, that would be illegal, correct?
If it involves classified information, absolutely.
David Ignatius put out this famous column on January 12th, where he mentioned the phone call between Michael Flynn, the December 29th phone call. Did you leak that information?
I did not.
The information you've heard so far, just kind of background information. What Q wanted to draw our attention to was Clapper's answer to the question of whether he would go in to Congress and answer question before Lindsey Graham's committee about FISA.
Given my age demographic, I'd be happy to come after I've been vaccinated for COVID-19.
Would you testify
otherwise,
remotely?
I could do it remotely, as the case with the Fauci hearing, or respond to questions or that sort of thing. But I don't particularly want to put my life or that of my wife in jeopardy for in-person testimony.
Q posted a link to that tweet and the video. Is this about the virus or about protecting themselves? Mail-in ballot push, election. D, state bailouts push. Refusal to testify, fear of COVID-19. Who benefits the most, Q? So now the lockdown is giving Democrats a reason to demand state and local government bailouts. It's giving them a reason to demand mail-in voting. It's also giving them a plausible reason not to show up at Lindsey Graham's hearings and testify what they know about Spygate. or Obamagate, as we're calling it. This morning, Patty Angel 64 got queued for this video.
My last election, please. Yeah. After my election, I have more flexibility. Yeah.
I understand. I transmit this information to Vladimir and Stanford.
Why exactly did Barack Obama say, after my election, I have more flexibility? Q posted a link to that. This morning, this is a tweet from the president. If I were senator or congressman, the first person I would call to testify about the biggest political crime and scandal in the history of the USA, by far, is former President Obama. He knew everything. Do it, Lindsey Graham. Just do it. No more Mr. Nice Guy. No more talk. So, Lindsey Graham pushed back on that. And Anon posted a couple of links. One is to a tweet, one's to an article. Lindsey Graham shoots down Trump's call for Obama testimony on Russian origins. Of course, there's a lot of people out there who hate Lindsey Graham. They don't trust him, and that's fine. You don't have to trust Lindsey Graham. You just need to know that Lindsey flipped 2 years ago and is working with the good guys, despite what other people say. So Q posted a link to an article and said, worth remembering, think chess. Do you attack the king in the beginning or middle to end? Queen protects king. You do not want Obama coming in first and testifying. The takedown of corruption always goes from the bottom to the top. You save the top people for last. Like in a chess game, you go after the king last after you remove all other pieces. Graham simply needs to start the investigations of Spygate and Senate Judiciary. The reason why Lindsey Graham is going to hold these investigations and why they're relevant is they're going to be open hearings, and he's going to be questioning people who were involved in this scandal, and the public is going to hear these people testify. It's about public awakening. And in November, after the election, Chuck Grassley is going to become chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he will continue the investigations. This afternoon, Q posted a link to a tweet by Lou Dobbs. This is an interview with John Solomon and Lou Dobbs about some things that are coming up in the news. I'll let you listen to this video.
Yeah, listen, I think there's some good news if for those of us who've wanted transparency and accountability, which is finally, and I do say finally, Lindsey Graham has scheduled a hearing to dig into these very serious issues. I know his investigative staff very well. They're very competent. They've been working very hard behind the scenes. They're going to have some big, big revelations that are not yet public that will move this narrative along and show just how far reaching the corruption inside the bureaucracy was. As for the issue of President Obama, you know, there's going to come a moment after that first evidence is laid out in his hearings where people are going to obviously say, hey, this started at the top with President Obama. And then I think Lindsey Graham will have to face the music of his own evidence and decide what he's going to do. And I think that moment may, you know, when the evidence is all out there, there'll be an even more poignant question to the chairman. Why aren't you talking to President Obama? And I think, well, you know, let's see what the evidence comes out. But keep in mind, over the last few months, there's been a lot of information taken from the National Archives, from the Obama administration. They lay out a very powerful case. We're going to begin to see that evidence over the next 3-4 weeks. And all I can say from what I know from my reporting is buckle your seatbelt.
John Solomon mentioned that there's going to be documents coming out from the National Archives. Q has hinted for quite some time that records will be coming over from the Obama administration that will shed light on some of the corruption. Q posted a link to a document. It's a letter from the Obama office. And this is in reference to a request by Chuck Grassley and Ron Johnson. It's a request for documents, and it has to do with events related to Ukraine's interference in the 2016 election. So the letter basically says this is, you know, a conspiracy. Everyone knows it was Russia that interfered in the 2016 election. Nevertheless, they handed over the documents. That gets us caught up to Q. If this broadcast has encouraged you, you might want to subscribe to my channel. You can also support me on Patreon. Link is in the description box. You can also check out my book, Calm Before the Storm. Link is in the description box. Keep me and Denise in prayer. Keep the president in prayer. Keep Q and the team in prayer. Love you all. Take care. I will catch you on the next broadcast.